So this beautiful text called Bhakti Sudha or Nectar of Devotion, we have started with invoking the Lord's grace in the first verse and in the introduction and remembered the Lord, and that is good. Anytime you start anything good, it is always beneficial to remember the Lord because He is there, or she, the consciousness, the Lord within and without is always there and responsible for whatever we achieve, whatever we get. So one should always do that, begin the day, begin the meals, and all our activities, remembering. After having done that, we now come to what is the goal or purpose of my life, or what are the four main goals or pursuits that we all practice, and that is called the Purushartha. Purusha means human being, and Artha means what is the human's goal or purpose, or what do they desire. So these are the four Purusharthas which we will talk about. And then if we have time, we'll talk about heaven. Because heaven is where everybody wants to go. So is it a place worth going or not? We'll talk about that. Verse number 2 in page 4. We are doing verse number 2 in page 4. Dharmarth kama mokshahi, marth kama mokshahi, purushartas chaturvidaha, purushartas chaturvidaha, tebhya shreshtatara bhaktihi, bhya shreshtatara bhaktihi, mata bhagavatotamaihi. Mata bhagavato tamaihi. So he says, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So these are the four. Dharma being righteousness. Artha is wealth, security, property. Kama is the sense pleasures, comforts of life, enjoyments. And moksha is liberation. So indeed, he means indeed, Purusha, Artha, Chaturvidaha. These are the four goals, four Purusharthas, four pursuits, Chaturvidaha, four kinds. And these are what everybody is pursuing in the world. At least these two we all are. We are not sure about this. And this one, of course, hardly anyone. But anyway, so this is what everybody is pursuing, but he says beyond that, even beyond that Shreshtatara, even beyond that is bhakti. Devotion to God is even superior to liberation, is even beyond liberation. Who says that? Uttamaihi, the great devotees of the Lord, great saints have said that devotion is even beyond liberation. So this is the translation of the verse. Today I shall mostly talk about the first three. What is dharma, righteousness, what is wealth, and what is sense pleasures. Liberation we'll talk about next week. And then how devotion is beyond liberation, we will cover it obviously in the rest of this text. So now artha and kama, these are the things that we all pursue. Wealth, you know, security. Everybody wants that. You know, everybody has to have that. Like if I move to a new town, I first say, okay, I need a place to stay. So I need a secure place. I need a house. And then once I have found a house, then I'll say, okay, now let me see where are the restaurants, where are the clubs, where can I play tennis, where can I play golf. Mm-hmm. So all those things come afterwards. First, I need a place to stay. Or say I'm going on a flight and my seat is not confirmed and I'm in that standby, you know, wait list. So I'm pacing in front of that counter and somebody says, you know, would you like some ice cream? And I say, you scream. You know, I start screaming. Why? Because nothing. Or somebody says, come and read this interesting book. No, I can't. Why? Because I don't have the security. But once I go there and they say, okay, you are confirmed. Okay, now I'm fine. Now I say, okay, now let me find a book to read on the plane. Let me get some food to eat. So everything else, all the other pleasures come. First, I need security. I need comfort. And so to get security, obviously, I need wealth. You know, to as we had discussed last week also, to get all the pleasures of life, I need to earn. So I go out and earn, I go out and work. And that is good. But unfortunately, what happens to a lot of us is that the wealth, instead of becoming a means to a goal, becomes a goal by itself. I need money to enjoy life, to for my comfort, for my security. I need money to help. I need money to, but money itself becomes a goal instead of becoming a means to an end. And that is where the problem arises. They say money is a very good servant, but the moment it becomes your master, then you are in trouble, because then you are morning to night working just for money, fair means, foul means, whatever it takes to earn money, you will do that. In fact, there's a very beautiful story. It's very interesting. So there was this, it's actually a true insight story. It said there was this Chinese businessman, and you know, he was very, very successful. He was so successful that his worth was hundreds of millions of dollars. So much money he had made. He was so rich, and morning to night he worked 14 hours, 16 hours a day. He never rested, gave up his family life, his children, and even gave up his health. And he was so rich when he died, but what happened at age 55, he got a heart attack. And he never got to enjoy his wealth, never, you know, spend time with his family. Whole life he was working. And his wife, she was younger. She was in her 40s. And so she, you know, they had a chauffeur who had been working with them for 15, 20 years. So she falls in love with the chauffeur and marries him. So the chauffeur inherits all this wealth and all. So, and he was, of course, they were very big people in that town, you know. So the TV interview, everybody came and they said, you know, now you have all this money. What do you think? So the chauffeur says, you know, all my life, I thought I was working for my boss. Now I realize my boss was working for me. All this money he earned for me. So that is what happens. You know, that is the problem with acquiring wealth, where that becomes the goal, and where then I don't care how I get it. And I am rolling in wealth, and people around me are, you know, hungry. They don't even know where the next meal is coming from. But I don't care. I say, you know, that is their karma. Let them suffer. I have to enjoy my life. I have to do what I want. So the reason they have put dharma on top of wealth and on top of sense pleasures, and similarly the sense pleasures also, you know, people are possessing and enjoying and, you know, doing things, you know, I mean, eating, drinking, all kind of pleasures, you know, right and wrong, and over-indulging and over-enjoying and all that. And again, there is no, you know, thought of morality or what is right or what is wrong, what I should do, what I should not do. And in that process, we even neglect our own health. We neglect the health of people around us. We neglect our physical health, our mental health. So that's why they say that wealth and enjoyment is good. There is nothing wrong with that. But above that is dharma. That both of these should be governed by righteousness. My acquiring of wealth and my enjoyment of sense pleasures. So my earning of wealth and my enjoyment of sense pleasures should be controlled by dharma, should be controlled by righteousness, should be governed by righteousness, should be governed by the right thing. And we find that the government also controls that. Like now we are going out to earn wealth. They have rules and regulations. You know, you like in the stock market, you cannot do insider trading. You cannot, you know, trade illegally. Land sales, you know, they have rules and regulation about selling land, about houses, about possessing property. If you earn too much wealth, then, you know, they will, your tax rates will go up. So what the government is trying to do is regulate so that the earning of wealth is done honestly, done correctly, and to some extent equitably, so that a person who is earning less is paying less taxes. A person who is earning more is paying more taxes. So that is the government's way of controlling that. But more important than the government's control is the law of dharma, which is righteousness. Because you may do everything that is legal and that is correct, but it may not be morally correct. Morally, it may be wrong. Like say now, there are some people who need work, and there is a contract you have to offer to them. There is a work, a job you have for them, and there are 8 or 10 people applying. Now the unemployment is there, the jobs are hard. So this person comes and he's desperate, to find work. And you beat down his price. He wants, say, $500. And you say, I'm only going to give you $200 or $250. And he has to agree because he needs the work. He needs the money. So legally, you have done the right thing. Legally, you have done what is right. He said, I followed the law. But morally, is it right? If job that was worth $500, if you're only paying him $200 or $250 and taking advantage of his weakness or his inability to... So the law of dharma is even more strict than the constitution of the country, because they not only look at what is legal, but they look at what is ethical, they look at what is moral, what is good for you, what is good for society. So the law of dharma is far bigger than, and that is the law of God, the law of the Lord is far bigger and more powerful than the law of the country, because you may get away. Say if you cheated somebody and you earn money dishonestly and you got some contract through insider information and all that, yeah, legally you may get away if nobody finds out and you have hundreds of millions and you are very rich. But the law of dharma knows that what you did was immoral or unethical or wrong. So you cannot cheat that law. You can cheat the law of the country, the constitution and the police and the courts and judges, but that highest judge, you cannot cheat him. And similarly for sense pleasures also, because just as we have dharma for the wealth, we have also dharma for sense enjoyment, over-enjoying, over-indulging, overeating, not eating the right thing, not sleeping late and drinking and eating and all that. Now, you go to the doctor or your wife asks you, have you been following your diet? Yes, I have been following my diet. Did you eat any sweets? No, I didn't eat any sweets. Yeah, but when you get your blood tested, your hemoglobin A1C and your blood sugar is sky high. So you cannot cheat the dharma of the body. The body knows, even though you may tell others, but the law of dharma of the body cannot be cheated. So that's why they say that the righteousness should be followed in artha and in kama. Talking about overindulging, this man said, I have read so much about the evils of, I read all the time in the books about the evils of drinking, evils of overeating, evils of indulging. And I read so much about it. So the man says, and what are you going to do about it? He said, I've stopped reading. So that is why they say that you must accumulate wealth, you must enjoy. We are not saying that, but they should be under the control of dharma, and they should be in moderation. In control, in moderation, and with the right way and with the right means, doing the right thing at the right time. This is pretty much what I have. Then we'll be talking more about it, about liberation and about how the devotion is beyond liberation in the next few weeks. But does anybody want to comment? Otherwise, we'll go to the next verse about heaven. Does anybody have any comments or questions about... Yes, is higher than liberation even. Higher than all of them. All of them, yes. Higher than dharma, artha, kama, and even higher than liberation. Liberation is where you are free from birth and death, and you are free from anxiety. Yes. So that is considered the highest goal, but some people say devotion is even higher than that. So we'll be discussing that in the next few weeks. Yeah, so that is a different subject by itself. So, yeah, but we'll talk about that. Yes. Love for God is higher than any goal. At least that's what, because this book mostly talks about love for God. We have, as I said, last few years we had talked more about the path of knowledge, but now we are going to the path of love. So the path of love is glorified even above knowledge. Actually, they go hand in hand, but he in overall, I think love is more powerful than even knowledge.
So, Neil,
yes.
I say in the Bible that the love of money is the root of all evil.
Yes.
Do you believe that?
Yeah.
There's nothing else besides the love of money. That's the root of, all evil.
Right. Because love, you know, money, as I said, as an instrument, you use it, it's okay. But when you start loving money, then you love it more than your wife and more than your children and more than even your own health. So then that becomes everything else follows. With desire comes greed and anger and jealousy and hatred and competitiveness and selfishness and arrogance, pride. All those come with the love of money, means the desire, excessive desire for money, which they call as trishna, means the excessive thirst. Yes, I think that's what they mean.
Cannot take it with them.
Right.
But still they act as if they could.
Right. There is that Alexander story. I told it on Sunday. If nobody was here, I think you were here. Yeah, it's a beautiful story. Alexander the Great, as you know, conquered almost the whole of Europe, even parts of Asia. He was the most powerful emperor ever in history, one of the most powerful. And towards the end of his life, after he had plundered and looted and collected so much wealth and, you know, killed so many people to earn it, he developed some degree of maybe understanding or some degree of, you know, some regret, we don't know. But it is said that he gave very specific instructions. He was actually sick and he knew that he was not going to live too long. He was going to die shortly. He was quite ill. So he left two envelopes and he said, these should be opened after I die. And of course, the king's instructions, so they have to follow. So envelope number one was given to the minister and envelope number two was given to a very trusted friend. And he said, after the instructions of number one have been followed, then envelope number two will be opened afterwards. So they said, okay. So they opened envelope number one and it said, you know, my body should be carried by all the best doctors in the country. The best doctors in the country have to be brought and they have to carry my body to the funeral home. So king's order, so all the doctors were called, you know, they said you have to come. And so the soldiers went, all the doctors were brought, and they were carrying the king's body to the funeral home. And there were quite a few of them, so they were okay. Then the second was that as I am going, my wealth, you know, great portions of it should be distributed among the poor. The gold, the diamonds, the jewels, money should be distributed. So all along the way, they were distributing money, and the poor people, there were thousands of people, because it was the great emperor's funeral, and they were all so happy they were getting money. And the third, he said, my hands should be, normally the hands are kept in the casket, but holes should be made, and my hand should be out of the casket like that. That's a strange request. Why did the emperor want that? So they followed it. And so the funeral went, and the money was distributed, and his hands were out, and then finally he was buried. After he was buried, there was a great big, you know, gathering where obviously, you know, they were paying homage and talking about how great he was and all that, the memoriam or whatever service, whatever they call it. And then there they said, okay, let's open the second envelope. So this friend came and he opened the second envelope and he read it out. And the Alexander said, you know why I gave those three instructions? He says, first, I asked that my body should be carried by all the best doctors in the land, which means I wanted to tell you all that when your time comes, not even the greatest doctor or the best hospital, nobody can save you. When it is time to go, you have to go. So nothing can help you. So that is number one. Number two, why did I want my wealth to be distributed? I wanted people to know that no matter how much you earn, no matter how much you collect, not a penny you can take with you. Nothing. Everything gets left behind. You may be a millionaire, a billionaire. To the higher consciousness, it doesn't matter how much money you have. Only thing that you can take with you are your karmas, your good actions, and how much love you have for God and how much you have progressed spiritually. So the only thing that can go with you is your good karmas, which determine your next life. And the whatever spiritual progress you have made, that never gets wasted. You know, people say, I'm going to sit and meditate, I'm going to pray, I'm going to worship the Lord. So how about if I die and don't reach God? You know, in the sixth chapter in the Gita, Arjuna asked the same question. He says, if I die before reaching you, O Lord, and I suddenly die, and so then has my effort been wasted? You know, I put all this effort, I sacrificed my time, went to church and prayed to you and meditated and did all the service. And then if I die, then what? It's all over? The next life, do I have to start? At least he believed in rebirth. He said, next life, do I have to start all over again? You know, that whole account has become zero. You know, it's become zero balance. And again, I have to start with prayer and meditation and karmas. The Lord says, not at all. He says, whatever good deeds you have done and whatever spiritual progress you have made, if you have acquired some knowledge, you may forget the reading and the books, you know, and ABCD. Obviously, when you're reborn, you have to learn ABCD. But whatever spiritual progress you have made, however far you have reached closer to God, to closer to the truth, you start your journey from there itself. So that's why the Lord says that a person who has lived a good life, I make sure that his next birth is in the home of yogis, in the home of very spiritual people, so that his spiritual journey can continue. So here, Alexander said three things. One is, the doctors could not save me. Secondly, all the money I acquired, I could not take. So that's why I said my money should be distributed, because I can't take it anyway. And they said, why did he have his hands out? He said, I wanted people to see that I came with empty hands and I left with empty hands. When the day I was born, my hands were empty. When I came out of my mother's womb, I didn't have anything. And when I'm leaving also. So that is the idea of this beautiful story, that we spent, and he spent his whole life acquiring, plundering, pillaging. And at the end, he realized that I had wasted my talents, wasted my efforts. Not only that, but so much misery he had caused to so many people, you know, conquering them, killing them. So maybe that was his way of atoning, you know, at the end, that at least, you know. So maybe at least if he has that right understanding, then he may, you know, progress further spiritually and so on. But that is just the essence of this story, that we may acquire things, but it has to be done rightfully and has to be done in moderation and by controlled by the righteousness. And then liberation and heaven we'll talk about next week. We have time. Any questions, any comments, anything else that one may want to talk about? Yeah.
Dharma referred to as your path?
Actually, dharma has many meanings. Dharma, here it is used as righteousness, but dharma is also referred to as religion, like Hindu dharma, Islam dharma, Christian dharma. That means your religion. Dharma also means your status in life. Like if you are a student, then they say, okay, what is your student dharma? What is your duty as a student? So they say, grahastha ashrama or brahmacharya ashrama means at the time of youth, what is your duty? Your duty is to study and listen to your parents. Then as a householder, grahastha ashrama, what is the dharma of a householder? The householder has to earn, has to take care of her children, has to take care of her parents and save for retirement, but at the same time help work for the benefit of society. Then after 50 or 60, then you are retired, then it is called vanaprastha, where I am now giving up my job, giving up my work, cutting down, and slowly withdrawing from society and evolving towards the higher. And then the fourth is sannyas, where you completely give up everything and your whole day and night your pursuit is of that. So dharma means that. Dharma also means the essential nature. Like the essential nature of sugar is sweetness. So what is the dharma of sugar? Sweetness. What is the dharma of fire? Heat. So like that. What is the, you know, so that is all. So dharma is, has many meanings depending on the context in which you are using it.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, if you look in the Sanskrit dictionary, the word dharma actually has 2 pages of meanings.
2 pages.
Yes. So many. It's depending on the context. That is the beauty of Sanskrit. The same word can have different meanings depending on the context in which it is used. But the most important is, it is what is my essential nature. So what is my dharma? My dharma is this. My essential nature is consciousness. Everything else is secondary. None of that is permanent. That is who I really am. So just as the essential nature of sugar is sweetness, without sweetness it won't be called sugar. So my essential nature is this. Om. Well, that's a good question. Thanks.